You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we declared independence from the Republican Party a long time ago, and my name is also Justin. I'm not sure how obscure of a political reference that is. I saw it on Twitter. I think Daniel may have shared it with me, but maybe you get that, maybe you don't. Anyway, I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you are sick of the false dichotomy of political parties in the United States of America, then you have found the right place. We are neither right or left, neither nor, either or. We are the midside. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Not left, not right, just correct.
Hey, a new catchphrase is born.
We're not in the middle. I'd like to explain that to new people listening. The midside doesn't mean the middle. It means we take our own side, which is the side of the individual with liberty and justice for all.
Yeah, the term midside came about because, you know, when we were growing up, it was all about, are you in the in crowd or are you in the out crowd? And it's like, well, no, I'm neither. I'm the third option, the mid side, the mid crowd, which doesn't mean the middle. It just means sometimes you're in, sometimes you're out. But you're basically on your own. You're in neither crowd. You're your own crowd.
Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't.
Be your own mob.
We really hate that false dichotomy too. Be your own mom. That's why we really like the villain from Split. All right, anything else you want to update us on this week, Daniel?
That's broad. I survived Trump's Independence Day celebration with tanks and whatnot. That was fun.
And the airports that we took over in the Revolutionary War.
Our president, man, historian, philosopher, economist. What can't he do?
And fabulous reader of the teleprompter.
No one reads a teleprompter like Donald J. Trump.
Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's been a eventful week. We had a couple earthquakes, and that was fun.
Fun?
Yeah, it was a kind of like being on a cruise ship, except for on land. Nice slow rolling waves here in Dale's Lawn. And yesterday spent the entire day in the construction zone working on setting up all the Ethernet lines and camera system, sound system in the store. Special thanks out to my friend Silver Wraith, who came and helped. He did all the punch downs, which frustrates me to no end. So it's great to have someone who knows how to do that better than me and actually doesn't make their head want to explode. So got everything going. Couple little minor equipment malfunctions that I'll need to take care of today, but slowly but surely we're getting a store open out in Long Beach.
That's exciting. I'm glad to hear that. I want to go back to the earthquake thing, though. Daniel, have you ever experienced an earthquake?
When I was in LA, we had a very small earthquake, but it was centered right near where we were, so we did feel it a tiny bit. I think it lasted quite literally, a second and a quarter or something like that. It was very short.
Okay, so the epicenter of these two earthquakes was 135 miles from where I am, from Anaheim, the Midside headquarters. And the first one was 6.6, and the next day was like a 6.9 or a 7.1. I don't know. You can argue about.
Yeah.
It's a 7.1 now. Okay. Yeah. It was 7.1. Then they downgraded it to Gronk. Then they upgraded it back to 7.1. I guess. I don't know. Whatever. All I know is I did not feel the first one. Right? Everyone was like, oh my God, do you feel the earthquake? And I was like, no. This second one, I'm sitting on my couch And I think my girlfriend's shaking the couch, and I look at her, and she's not moving, and she's not reacting. And I'm like, am I going crazy right now? And then it gets worse, and I start to hear, like, the apartment moving, and it keeps going. This did not end.
It was
and I'm like,
quite
what do
long.
We do?
It was quite long.
It was terrifying. I will openly admit to being terrified, because it's completely out of your control. And I think earthquakes are the perfect natural disaster for California, because it's pure chaos and there's nothing you can do about it, and you just have to put up with it, and then it's over with it, and you have to rationalize it being okay afterwards.
This sounds like the homeless problem. That's what the politicians are doing with the homeless.
It sounds like every problem in California.
Did you run to the doorway? Isn't that what you're supposed to do, is go to, like,
well, that's what I did. I looked at my girlfriend.
He ran to Instagram, let's be honest.
No, he ran to catch the Funko Pops falling off the wall is what he did.
Okay, I did. Daniel has correctly pointed out my entire thought process. So the first thing I did is I looked at my girlfriend. I go, don't we do something? Don't we, like, go stand in the door with the door frame?
Don't we do something?
She goes, no, we just wait for this to be over. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then eventually it went on so long that we went and stood in the doorways, and I was like, thank God for that episode of Saved by the Bell that I saw when I was a kid.
Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. Also, yes, when I was sitting on the couch and not doing anything and just feeling everything move, I was looking at my stack of Funko Pops, where I have, like, my Disney ones at the top, where it's like the giant Scrooge McDuck with the Splash Mountain on top and then DJ R3X all up there high. And I'm looking at them and I go, how quickly can I run over there if that starts to fall?
So we actually get the occasional earthquake here in Virginia. And in fact, the last time Virginia had a major earthquake was when I moved to L.A. in a twist of fate. Faiza was still back here. But when I was on my road trip, like the day I arrived in L.A., Virginia had an earthquake, and a sizable one. Not no deaths, no major damage, but 6 point something. And in Virginia, that's pretty darn big. So I missed that one. But occasionally here, we will feel tremors. You lay in bed and you get a little shake in the wall. You're like, is that a train? No, we have no trains around here. Okay, that's an earthquake. Okay. But they're very light.
I could deal with a little tremor. This was like the whole ground was moving back and forth. It was not.
Can anyone explain to me, for the first time in my adult life, I've heard the word temblor now? Twice? Anyone?
No.
California people?
Tumblr.
I mean, there's a Tumblr joke in there somewhere, but
they
I can't figure it out.
I'll look it up, but they said it was a 6.4 and a 7.1 Tumblr.
Are you sure they weren't saying Tremblr?
Nope, it's Tumblr. Yep, California earthquake, magnitude 6.4, Tumblr, rock state, T-E-M-B-L-O-R, Tumblr. No one, huh? None of you California people.
I Googled Tumblr and the autocomplete is Tumblr and California oy, so maybe it's Spanish for earthquake?
Tumblr is a Spanish word, intransitive verb, to shake.
Okay. You laughed at me, Daniel. Maybe you.
T-E-M-B-L-A-R is Tumblr.
The half Mexican guy is asking the white people what the Spanish word means. Yeah.
My confusion comes from the fact that most of the articles I read about this are in English, surprisingly, and use the word Tumblr. The Daily Beast.
On that note,
Ridgecrest earthquake, chance of bigger Tumblr on horizon.
Now that we can really trust your ability to read news articles properly, let's go into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Just for that terrible transition, I'm not plugging Patreon this week. I absolutely am not going to plug patreon.com/themidside. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to tell you to go there and give us a few bucks every time we produce a piece of content, because that was a terrible transition, and our patreon.com/themidside subscribers deserve better than that, so I'm not plugging it. Okay. Bluebell ice cream went viral this week in probably more ways than one. But in this particular instance, it was because a juvenile licked a container of Bluebell ice cream and put it back in the freezer in Texas.
In the privacy of her own home, right?
Oh, in the privacy of her home? No, sorry. In the grocery store. She put it back in the freezer. At the grocery store in the San Antonio area. And then, of course, her video doing so went viral. And apparently, I am completely disconnected from the internet world because this is some sort of trend, I'm told. I actually, before the show, I asked Justin why we were doing such a local-ass story about Lufkin, Texas, where a juvenile faces up to 20 years in prison for second-degree felony tampering. And I was informed very quickly that I'm Old Man Richards, and in fact that this is some sort of challenge, like the Tide Pod eating thing, where teens all over the country go out and lick ice cream and put it back in the freezer at the stores, and then you, the unsuspecting consumer, buys it, and you get all pre-licked ice cream. So...
Justin, I've also seen in this challenge, there was a video of a girl who went in like the aisle with like the lotions, and she just like opened some lotion and poured it on the ground and then put it back in, on the shelf as well. So it's just sort of the challenge it has spawned is just sort of sabotaging retail workers and sabotaging people who buy things in stores, I think.
Yeah, this comes from the genre of prank videos. From the internet, there's always this one-upsmanship to try to do the most edgy quote-unquote thing, and so I don't know why this one caught on in normie culture, probably because it's so disgusting, but I don't think she's getting the attention she wanted.
I don't know. The girl doing this is wearing glasses and has a nose ring, and she looks very, I don't know, woke millennial to me. That's the look she's got on. And she's licking ice cream and putting it back. Is this some sort of anti-capitalist thing? Is that really what's going on here?
I don't think you can go that far. I think it's just kids thinking it's funny to hurt other people.
Okay, yeah. So then explain to me this. Ready?
Okay.
Why are we doing this story?
Why are we doing this story? This is the question I have about this story. This is the question I have about this story. Usually you ask the question, so I guess this time I have to ask the question.
I asked the question. The question is, why the hell are we doing this story?
Okay. This is my curiosity. You know, you call yourself Old Man Richards. I'm sure William's about to call me a normie. Mm-hmm. Is this stuff that kids would have done anyway without the internet? It's just exacerbated now? Or is this an example of the degradation of the moral fiber of our culture? I mean, the idea of going into a store and intentionally sabotaging things, especially in a way that really breaks people's personal space, right? So pouring the lotion on the ground is obnoxious enough. You know, that's, you know, violation of private property, you know, violation of ownership. But the idea of going in there and licking ice cream or taking a big scoop out with your hand and eating part of it and putting it back in, that was one of the videos I saw. Isn't that breaking the social contract? Now, I'm not saying everyone has to be explicitly aware of the social contract, but it's sort of like, you know, if you remember that Life on the Midside segment where I was accused of white privilege because the guy got in the hot tub and put on his speakers, his music, when we were the only two there, as if like you're in public and you just don't respect other people. You just do whatever you want in public. Is this sort of the same thing where there's no understanding of the public space versus the private space anymore, and nobody has any idea of the social contract? Shouldn't these kids be taught that?
Well, 20 years in prison will certainly teach you that. I don't know. Aren't they just reenacting Fight Club? Remember the chick that goes around taking other people's laundry and just grabbing whatever she wants from the store and leaving, and his girlfriend in Fight Club.
Fight Club? You think these kids have seen Fight Club?
Oh, that's right. That happened before the election of Donald Trump. There's nothing in the universe that
there is nothing in the universe that happened before the election of Donald Trump. So, yeah, I mean, there's an interesting question there about is this going on if there's no social media? Are people doing this kind of horrible thing? Now, I certainly think that there are weird psychotic behaviors. People steal things. People tamper with things.
Well, people try to one-up each other in their own friend group. But when you don't have any friends and you're making prank videos on the internet instead, this is kind of where that leads to. Like, it's all about the clicks, and, right? This is just this is just narcissism. I think this is some sort of, like, psychotic thing. This is just narcissism. This is her way to get clicks and get her some street cred on the prank video circuit.
Well, it's interesting, William. I really like that phrase. It's all about the clicks, because you went from saying it's all about, you know, your group, and if you don't have a group, it's all about the clicks. So either way, it's all about the clicks, which I find really interesting. And in relation to that, I think Daniel has a point. It's sort of the idea that if you're like the town nut and you believe in the flat earth and you don't have anyone else who reifies that or reinforces it and makes you like want to, you know, get jazzed up and really talk about it, you're fine. You know, it's just like, oh, that's the town nut. You know, he's harmless. He just believes the earth is flat. But then you have a group online and suddenly you have incel culture developing where all of these people with these individual separate issues have, you know, whatever issue they have come together and they feel legitimized because of that. And they lean further into their issues rather than getting help.
I think you have succinctly identified basically the problem with the internet, Justin, and social media, which is that we understand the concept of having a village idiot. But in 2019, the village idiot starts a Facebook group.
Right.
Yeah.
And now he has a coalition of village idiots. Say,
though, and the Facebook group is the village is the idiot, not I'm the idiot.
I do want to say this has another side of that same coin. I mean, there was no rational egoists in my little hometown, right? There was a chance for me to connect with other people on the internet that it provided in a good way, too. So with the good comes the bad in this case. Like, yeah, the village idiot can start the Village Idiot Facebook group, but then you can connect to people that care about the things you care about all over the place.
I think the pessimist side of that argument, though, William, is that it appears that the idiots are spreading faster than the rational egoists, unfortunately.
Well, there's several reasons for that, right? Like, it's a lot easier to spread being an idiot than it is to spread being smart, because it takes hard work to be smart, right?
Let's just say rational.
Okay, rational. All right, you don't have to be smart. You have to be rational. Whatever terminology you want to use. My point still stands. And then the other two things that are important to that are the culture at large is relativistic. So there's no way to, especially online, socially shame these people.
You mean
for
traveling
being
close to the speed of light, right? Relativistic.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I meant. I mean, maybe traveling closer to the speed of cultural driving into a wall. So that's the first thing, right? It's all, everything is equal, so we can't say that these people are wrong, right? So that leads to their reinforcement. And then also these platforms aren't being developed in a rational way either, and it's contributing to that. As much as, you know, Twitter likes to say they're trying to get rid of the troll culture, all they're really doing is propping it up with their rules, because the trolls are the rules are designed in a way to help the trolls, not hurt them.
Yeah, Justin, I think that's a great point which we should circle around really fast on. Is Twitter and Facebook built an empire of selling to advertisers? But the way they built their empire was on outrage. And advertisers hate outrage. And that's why you see them doing some strange and seemingly irrational moves, is because in order to keep the network active, quote unquote, it's built on outrage and virality. But for advertisers, that's anathema, right? They don't want to be associated with outrage. And so you see this constant crazy behavior on the behalf of the platforms for exactly that reason.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've economized outrage, which is interesting. And that thus you'll get more of it, because that's sort of what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, right? The woke coins. These are the outrage coins. The more you get, the more money you make. So
yeah. Especially in the prankster genre.
Well, is this going to change the way either of you shop?
No.
I mean, I already
look at the seals for things like that anyway.
Well, and Bluebell Ice Cream has no seal, which is part of the problem here, right?
Oh. Well, then how is she getting charged with bypassing
this video
stuff?
That's part of the blue. The part of it is Bluebell Ice Cream in particular has no plastic seal over it. You just open it up and the ice cream is ready to be licked. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to look twice now at the top of my ice cream and see if there's a giant tongue mark across the top or something like that.
I mean, there's two things. One, I go to the store as little as possible. I order online as much as possible. Now, for something like ice cream, I just don't like to keep ice cream in the house because I'll eat it constantly and get fat. So I have to just, you know, make it a thing I go out for every once in a while.
Yes. Also, if we knew, I think, what really happened in the back of restaurants, we'd be less grossed out by the licking of the Bluebell ice cream, I think.
To me, it's more the audacity. That to just go into the store with the cameras there, to open it up, to lick it, to put it back. Like, who even thinks of that?
No, with the camera there.
Right,
she brought the camera.
Right, and she videotaped herself, yeah.
It's not like she blurred out her face when she posted it on YouTube.
Yeah.
You can tell it's the summer, because in other ice cream news, an L.A. ice cream truck is fed up with influencers. I.e. people on Instagram or Twitter who have lots of followers and who can quote-unquote influence opinion. So they're doubling down on what they have to pay for ice cream. After years of social media influencers requesting free ice cream in exchange for, quote, exposure, CVT soft serve owner Joe Nietzsche made a new rule. Influencers pay double. In true influencer fashion, Nietzsche took to Instagram to post the scathing message. Shortly after, he made it official with a physical sign. This is his quote. "We truly don't care if you're an influencer or how many followers you have. We will never give you a free ice cream in exchange for a post on your social media page. It's literally a $4 item. Well, now it's $8 for you." So about 5 years ago, Nietzsche founded CVT, which stands for Chocolate Vanilla Twist. And over the past 4 years, he told CNN he's received an increasing amount of requests for free ice cream in return for quote-unquote influence. The truck owner hit a breaking point when he received a request last Thursday to comp 300 servings of soft serve in exchange for exposure. Nietzsche said he's got burned out and decided to do something about it. So now those who ask for free ice cream for exposure will be charged double. Justin, genius or social media ploy?
False dichotomy, bro?
Oh.
You set that up, right?
There it is. Yes, of course.
Yeah, I mean, look. First of all, I have a question for you. This is legal, right? Because you don't have to say you're an influencer. So if you just ask for normal ice cream, you get it for the normal price, right? So this is legal?
Well, influencer isn't a protected class. So I would say that,
yes, it is.
It is, in fact,
it's not
legal.
Not yet. I'm sure that the California now, Assembly is introducing bill right now.
Right
to
now,
protect
as we speak. They're listening live to the Midside so they can write an influencer bill. You could say that there might be disparate impact or something like that or if more influencers are
women and
minorities
or, will be hardest hit. That's true.
Yes, they'll be hardest hit by it. So you could make it like a disparate impact argument, but as far as I'm concerned, this is fully legal.
Good, because this is great. We need to do more of this to discourage the influencer culture. I mean, this idea that, again, maybe I should just rename this episode the Audacity Edition. Who has the audacity to call an ice cream place and be like, can we get 300 free servings because exposure? Like, who the fuck are you? Who the fuck are you? Like, seriously. And again, this is... this is sort of the tension in the last episode, the last story, where it was, you know, when the village idiots were just the idiot in the village, in real life, it wasn't a problem. This is the same thing here. At what point are we going to stop privileging social media over real life? Do those influencers really think they have as much of a market reach as they do? What about all the people in real life who aren't paying attention to what's going on Instagram?
Just remember, if you want to insult a social media influencer, their equivalent of the C word against women is irrelevant. All you have to say is that they are irrelevant. That is the insult. When you see them get angry and yell at normies, they'll say, you're irrelevant. And that's what they mean.
Not the I word. Yeah. Just drop the I word like 3 times in a row. We're canceled.
So yeah. if somebody called me irrelevant and they were a social media influencer, I'd be like, good.
Thank God.
Thank you. I don't want it. That's the thing, right? And this is what I'm talking about real life versus social media. There's relevancy to their social media community, and then there's relevancy to reality.
Or relevancy to my life. Like someone telling me I'm irrelevant, it's like, I'm relevant to me and my friends. Yeah. Like, I don't care about you and your friends.
But right, I mean, that's the thing. They have this community on Instagram, and it's all the same people, and they all act the same way. And then they want this ice cream guy to market his ice cream to only those people. Because you want to know what's going to happen. Because I'm going to tell you, I have this logic. If all these people start going to this place, I don't want to go to that place anymore because I don't want to be around those people. So you're going to lose everybody else to have the influencer community.
Yeah, I think one of his major points here is you know, other than the 300 servings thing, which is ludicrous beyond belief, but like someone walking up to the truck and saying, can I have free ice cream because I'm an influencer? His point here is it's $4. It's $4. Pay the $4 and post it on Instagram if you like it or not. We don't need your endorsement. This isn't a deal. You're not Michael Jordan or Colin Kaepernick for the modern folks. Just eat the ice cream, and if you like it, post about it. If not, don't. Or don't. Just don't post about it at all. Just tell your friends. Just be a human being. Not everything is about your brand. Sometimes you just can have some ice cream and enjoy it or not and tell your friends or not.
Daniel, I on social media am actually less likely to talk about when I do things that I like because I don't want to seem like one of these people. Like,
yeah, fair point.
When you have friends, like you just said, and you eat something really good or you go somewhere really good, don't you want to tell them? Because, you know, they're your friends and you're excited and you want to share that excitement and maybe they can enjoy that one time too. And social media is supposed to be like the digital concretization of that sort of relationship. Well, I am actually not inclined to act that way through social media because I don't want to look like these people. Because I've seen people with very few followers trying to act in this way, and it's so grating and comes off so delusional when you act this way when you're not. When, like, a person with, like, 900 followers on Instagram is like, oh, man, I need to tell this story of when I went to the store and this thing happens to me. It's like, who are you? Why? Why do I care? Just fucking talk about something interesting.
So I generally agree with you. I will say that the times when I make a particular point of posting about something I just experienced or I liked is if that thing is brand new and they don't have an established customer base yet. And part of it is I don't want it to go out of business because I want it to be there when I go next time. So there was a cookie dough place that opened in our mall, for instance, and it was the first time on the East Coast I'd seen just sort of like edible cookie dough, sort of like ice cream shop. I'm sure on the West Coast you have 1,000 of them already.
Right, because we already had the government telling us what was edible and what wasn't.
Yeah, there you go. So I thought, oh, this is lovely. First time I've ever seen this on the East Coast, and they have no line, no one goes in. I want people to know about this, so I posted a funny anecdote about going in, and she asked if I wanted a loyalty card, and I literally said to her, I'm going to need a loyalty passport, which is a moderately funny joke, but it was a reason to give them some mild exposure on my social media accounts because I want people to go in because I want them to be there the next time I go and want some cookie dough.
Right, 100%. So you had something worthwhile to say, but part of this influencer culture and why it's absurd they won't pay the $4 is they're going with quantity over quality content-wise, so they're posting everything and anything that happens to them and where they go as if it's special and new and interesting.
Right. Now, that being said, William, you'll give anyone a free sub who comes in with a million Instagram followers, right?
That's right. All you have to do is show me all the millions of Russian bots that are following you, and you'll immediately get a free sub. Now, this reminds me of one of my occasional indulgences on Reddit. r/4exposure, where they have all these conversations with delusional people that expect that things need to be free or in exchange for exposure. And it is very entertaining if you guys want to see all the indignation people have when they realize that things like musicians and artists get paid.
That is
why would you? It's just there, right? Like,
that was for a long time my life doing graphic design work. Now, I'm not a graphic designer for a living, but I'm a competent graphic designer. But everyone would say, hey, I need something designed, and I can't pay you, but this will be good exposure for you, or this will be good for your portfolio. That's another one I would hear a lot. And my answer was always, I need something that's good for my bank account. Because I'm not interested in exposure. I'm interested in money. I like money.
I am still privileged in some way.
What? I was like, for a minute there, I thought I had a stroke. I was like, am I speaking right now?
So I think there is a... There's a bit in here, or there's a sketch in here, where a flasher goes around and asks for free things for exposure, and then they give him a free thing, and he exposes himself with leaves.
Oh boy, Justin!
It could also have a twist. It
probably should be on Cinemax. It sounds like.
Well, there's also a twist in this where he says it's good for his portfolio, or if he asks if you want to see his portfolio.
Oh my god,
dad jokes.
But then when he
increasing.
Turns around to the audience, Justin, he actually has coats full of iPhones, like tweeting pictures, and he's fully clothed. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, that could be the end bit. So you never have to see him. You just see him opening his coat and people being like disgusted, and then at the end he opens it to the camera and he's just got like so many videos, or he's got a body cam or something.
Yeah. There you go. Well, speaking of influencers that are suspect, Nike
great transition.
Has pulled sneakers with the Betsy Ross American flag because Colin Kaepernick did not approve. Okay, so it was first reported by the Wall Street Journal that Kaepernick was reportedly asked about new Nike sneakers that featured the 13 stars in a circle designed by Betsy Ross. And Kaepernick reportedly contacted Nike, said that he felt that the flag was linked to a period in our country when we had slavery, and that it was not a good idea for them to sell the shoe. He and others were, quote, uncomfortable with them selling the shoe. And so even though the shoe had already been shipped to several stores, Nike recalled it, asking them to send the shoes back. In a statement, they said, quote, Nike has chosen not to release the Air Max 1 Quick Strike 4th of July, and that's the name of the shoe, apparently, as it featured an old version of the American flag. The statement to me reads like they printed one with like 48 stars or something. Like, oh, sorry, that was, you know, version 1 of the flag. We forgot to add the other two.
That was before Hawaii and Alaska, guys. Sorry about that. We don't want to offend the Hawaiians. Obama's from there. This could cause a problem.
Yes. Trying to wipe these shoes from the market, Nike has asked retailers to return the shoes after they were shipped already. The company did not explain to them why. They are currently unavailable on Nike's mobile apps, but they are, in fact, available on some sites like StockX. I guess that's a shoe site. And they're fetching as much as $2,500.
What are you giving them exposure for?
A pair? I
don't
know.
They didn't even pay us $4.
Exposure, like this show is exposure. Whatever the opposite of exposure is, this show is. This show is basically audio boycott. Kaepernick, of course, became a polarizing figure in sports after he decided not to stand for the national anthem during the 2016 NFL preseason football game in a protest against racial injustice. His actions have been widely defended as an exercise of freedom of speech and widely criticized as an example of douchery. So Nike, though, tapped Kaepernick for their 30th anniversary of its Just Do It campaign, which apparently means just kneel or not play football. I'm not sure what doing it actually means. But anyway, this went viral. Ted Cruz weighed in, of course, saying that, quote, it's a good thing Nike only wants to sell sneakers to people who hate the American flag, which is kind of funny. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey said that his state will now withdraw financial incentives for Nike to locate in the state because of the shoes being pulled. That move was expected to bring in about 500 jobs, no more. And just this week, Nike pulled another line of shoes from China because the Japanese designer of the sneakers had shown support for Hong Kong protests. So that's an interesting parallel there. Justin, do you already have your pair on back order?
Man, I gotta save my money for these super expensive Funko Pops. I can't also do super expensive sneakers. What am I, a sneakerhead too? Like, trying to make me go broke here?
Oh, man.
I do enjoy your edit in the article, though, where you edit in he's been widely criticized for his douchery. I appreciated that.
I just read. I don't. There's no editorial here. It's just.
I have a question. Didn't they hire Kaepernick to sell shoes?
Well, the argument would be, William, that he's selling shoes by helping the brand's image, and by doing this, he was helping them keep a more positive image, is what the argument would be, which would help them in the long run. I'm not saying I agree with the argument. I'm just saying that's the argument. Yeah, I mean,
if I were hired to sell shoes, I would, you know, promote the shoes, right? Like, even if I thought that somehow the Betsy Ross flag was inherently racist.
Oh, careful. You need to hit that L a little harder next time.
Okay. Even if I thought the Betsy Ross flag was inherently racist.
There you go.
Then I would still want to.
He's gay. He doesn't need to hit the L.
I would still
I'm just
want.
Glad someone finally caught up to that. But okay. Sorry, William. We love you.
I would still want to sell the shoes, right? Like, that's the thing they're paying me for.
I love how William's trying to have, like, a serious point, and we're just, like, derailing him.
Has he been on the show before? Does he know how this works? No, your point is well taken, William. You know, he's there. He's being paid, I'm sure, an inordinate amount of money to sell Nikes, and he's literally done the opposite here.
This is his only source of income currently.
Yes, I imagine it is his only source of income. Because he's not playing football because he's terrible.
Yeah, but he made enough in one season starting than he needed for his entire life.
Well, at the rate he's burning through it, I don't know. But
well, Daniel, I had some breaking news related to this story. The U.S. Army to drop U.S. from name over past links to slavery. This from the Duffel blog. So I think they're trying to follow suit.
Trying to steal my Woker joke stories?
Well, I mean, I was going to point that out, William. I mean, based on the logic, can't we just throw out the American Constitution now?
That's right. It was made during the time of slavery. I mean, forgetting the fact that its internal logic is why we then fought a civil war to rid ourselves of slavery.
Yeah, I mean, you're throwing out everything that was done during the time of slavery. You've got all the works of Frederick Douglass and the Emancipation Proclamation, and a whole bunch of things, you know, currency.
I want to hear about the Underground Railroad ever again.
Yeah.
Wasn't the French Revolution during the time of slavery, too? Maybe we need to go back to royalist France.
You know, they would say U.S. slavery.
You know what this reminds me of is there was when I used to work for the Ayn Rand Institute, a story came across our desk that referred to Ayn Rand as a Nazi-era author.
Yeah.
This is what this reminds me of.
This is a slavery-era flag. Oh, no.
Yes, it's a slavery-era item, so therefore bad.
I would just like to point out while we're saying these things that, again, if I've never said this on the show before, though I'm pretty sure I have, Thomas Jefferson literally said that we can't do everything, people. The next generation is going to have to handle the slavery problem. We just, I don't know, for the first time in the history of the world, made a nation based on individualism and ended the tyranny of government. So get a little historical perspective, Colin Kaepernick.
I'm surprised that they didn't institute social justice. I mean, without it, like, we can't have any flag, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, look, trans
just
people
be under
aren't even
the
mentioned
flag.
In the Constitution. So
that's right. Trans people have been oppressed from back then.
Someone, I think it was Larry Elder, who I was listening to, who was an LA libertarian radio host who made a point that I've literally never heard made, and I was shocked I've never heard it made, which is that America gets pegged with being a land of slavery and whatnot. Slavery existed, obviously. It was a horrible institution. Slavery existed all around the world. It was a horrible institution. But the number that gets turned around is like slavery was in America for hundreds of years or whatever. And he pointed out very astutely, he goes, well, that's not technically correct because America hasn't been a country for that long. 350 years or whatever the number is. He says, America founded in 1776. Slavery lasted fewer than 100 years in the United States of America, and we fought the bloodiest war in our history to end it. So while slavery existed for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years in human civilization, it lasted for under 100.
And still exists today.
It still exists today, that's right. And it was legally permissible for under 100 years under a constitution that favored individual rights, the first time that it ever happened in American history, or in world history. So it's an astute point that I've never heard made before.
I cannot stand this over-obsession with American slavery that ended, so long ago when we have actual slavery today. Like, it seems to me the height of narcissism to be talking about how terrible things are because of slavery so long ago in this country, when those evils are being perpetrated today in certain parts of the world, right? Without any passing comment from these woke leftists.
Well, right. That's it. Narcissism is exactly the correct word, William, because everyone's just looking at it from what they think affects them personally, because our generation has lost the ability to look at things from a broader spectrum culturally. I mean, relevant to this same sort of line of thinking, the next day after the bad earthquake, I say bad, but, it was bad to me. I was shitting myself. But I called my dad, and he said something, and I laughed at it because it's, like, so stereotypical old man Republican, but he's also 100% correct. He's like, these people are worried about man-made climate change and the fucking earth is shaking. Like, there are earthquakes and that's a major issue. And I'm like, yeah, he's right. And it's the same thing with the plastic straws, right? Like, we're so worried about this, the plastic straws, when we have a fucking drought conditions
here. All the plastic is coming from India and China that are making it into those giant pools of plastic in the ocean. But we're going to make a difference by outlawing straws in California.
Yeah, this is an Adam Carolla point, right? Which is, he would give a shit about any of these things if they actually solved any of the problems.
Right. If that's why Williams' point is so well taken.
By banning straws, we ended plastic waste instantaneously around the world, he'd be totally for it. Because he's a pragmatist.
Well,
right?
And we see the same kind of narcissism about, quote-unquote, the continued fight for gay rights in America. Meanwhile, gays are being thrown off buildings in certain countries in the Middle East.
Yes. So, speaking of Narcissism University, i.e. Cambridge, has decided that it would be a good idea to assign ethnic minority mentors to white academics in order to combat racism and assist, quote, institutional change.
Does it say ethnic? I thought it said ethnic. Did I? Well, it does say ethnic.
Ethnic. What did I say?
You said ethic.
Ethic minorities?
Yeah.
So I dropped that N like William dropped the L earlier.
Oh, wow, that was good. That was good. That was good.
Way Cambridge University is running... I didn't hear it, but I'm sure it was hilarious. Cambridge University is running a reverse mentoring scheme for staff to combat structural racism. Under the project, white senior academics and management staff are assigned one of their Black, Asian, and minority ethnic colleagues as a mentor in order to encourage institutional change. It is part of a raft of initiatives that the university's Equality and Diversity Department has introduced over the past year, aimed at boosting diversity and driving out racism. Earlier this week, it emerged that a PhD student quit in protest, accusing Cambridge of pervasive racism. This person, whose name is Indiana, said that as a white student, she had, quote, benefited from the structural racism of the university and felt she had an imperative to leave. She had witnessed an accumulation of racist incidents during her time at the university and went on to describe an incident where an English lecturer repeatedly read aloud the N-word during our class discussions. Looking into that further, which is not in the article, it was actually a lecture on racist texts, like talking about institutional racism, and they said the N-word as part of that. So,
oh, I thought he was just reading an excerpt from Huck Finn.
Could be.
I thought he Same was thing. Just reading the lyrics from a rap song.
That's right. Either way, student couldn't take it. She thought her own whiteness made it so that she had to leave. I read that as she's super lazy, but anyway. So Justin,
I just think she's angry at her parents for naming her Indiana to make her extra white.
That is the whitest of all state names. That's true. Second closest Iowa, but yes. So Justin, do you think this will finally end racism?
Yes, this is the perfect solution.
Okay,
if every
done.
One of us, if every one on. Of us just has a minority follow us around all day and oh. be an ombudsman for our behavior, we are
all
fixed.
Of us are assigned a minority. You're saying
yes.
that's like personal to us, and then
and they,
caters
yeah, they
to our intellectual needs.
Right, they have to help us with everything at all times.
Yeah.
Isn't this like just they back ended into slavery again? Like, I don't understand this. Also, how terrible are they at acronyms, right? So, BAME is what they have for Black, Asian, and Minority Ethnic, right? That's what they have. Okay,
BAME.
they could have named it BLAM, right? Black, Asian, Minority Ethnic. It could have been BLAM, which is like, BLAM, we're going to fix the problem. Oh, there's racism. Blam! There's racism. Let's get that blam on it, right? They could have done blam. That would have worked. Or also, it could have just been blame.
Oh! There what, you go.
These people! These people! And by these people, I don't mean the... fuck.
William, what do you think these assigned minority colleagues are going to actually do? What
do you think minority colleagues get a say in this?
What
if they don't want to enroll in the program?
What do you think their daily tasks are going to be for their white masters? I mean, scholars that they're assigned to.
I don't know. This is thought police on steroids, is it not? Like, you can't possibly justify this on any sort of intellectual grounds. Isn't it the ultimate affirmative action? It's like you are incapable of executing your job as a professor of algebra without a minority there to make sure you don't wrong speak.
And like, so there are so many questions, but like, are these Black, Asian, and minority ethnic colleagues
not Asian?
Going to be...
You know it's not Asian.
Well, what if they're Blasian? Can I get a Blasian assigned to me?
that's a different.
Wait, do you get a menu? Wait a minute. Do you get a menu?
Do you get a menu?
It's kind of like going to one of those buffet restaurants where there's different types of ethnic foods. You just get to say, well, you know, I'm particularly racist against, you know, I don't know, Inuits. So I definitely want that Inuit person following me around.
This is a television premise. This is the premise of Gran Torino starring Clint Eastwood. You're going to put a really old racist white guy with the race and gender he hates, and he's just going to be super racist towards him the whole time.
I'll have a number 3 extra woke, please. Thank you. My question about these students, or sorry, these colleagues who are going to be assigned is, you know, we're essentially assigning them literally based on their ethnicity, it seems. But
hey, can we stop saying the word assigned? As someone who is gender non-binary, the word assigned is really offensive to me because it reminds me of how I was traumatized when I was born, when I was assigned a gender.
That's right. But are they going to be screened for their ideas? Like, what if, you know, by accident, one of them is someone who doesn't believe in this woke nonsense?
Well, that's exactly what's going to happen, Daniel, is honestly, the majority of people who do this are just going to do it because they have to, and when they're talking to each other, they're going to make fun of this on their own. Is, you know, you're going to get the extreme people, and it's going to be like, oh man, I feel really bad for Jerry. He got stuck with Portia or whatever the fuck her name. Like, some social justice name. You know, Jerry got stuck with the trans girl, right? That they're going to feel bad for Jerry. But the rest of them are just going to, it's going to be a joke for most people because that's the way it is. Like, when stuff like this happens, maybe this is just me, because I'm the person who's not afraid to be like, you know, behind the scenes, like make fun of shit. If you're that first person who makes fun of the absurdity of this shit in public, if you witness the farce among people, then other people feel more comfortable making fun of how absurd they see it as. So what's going to happen is when these partners go off, they're going to make fun of this stuff because they all know it's absurd.
Yeah, this is one of the more bizarre ideas I've heard, which is now adults need ethnic shepherds to lead them around so that they don't accidentally stumble into structural racism. I didn't know it was literally a structure that you could run into, but apparently it is. My goodness, what crazy weird times we live in.
Speaking of that, and speaking of structural racism and all the different forms that things can take, I think it's time to head into The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. If you have not yet, please join our Discord. Our Discord is a way to really interact with us directly and influence the show. Two of the trailers submitted this week for Trailer Takedown were submitted by Midsiders. Greatly appreciate that because I think it made the show a lot better. So join Discord. It makes your life better because you get to interact with us. And it also makes our lives better, specifically mine, because it makes my production job on this show a lot easier. The more you want to see on the show, join Discord because you get to influence it and add the content. And you know what? I'm going to use whatever content you give me because I'm fucking lazy.
You're not just quitting Discord because your whiteness has given you an advantage, an unfair advantage in the Discord site?
I don't know. I can't even answer that question anymore. Okay. I don't know what's an advantage because I'm white. What's a disadvantage because I'm white? What's a disadvantage because I don't understand any of this. Speaking of which, I saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh,
now, Daniel.
No.
Yeah. Oh, no. I know you were interested in seeing this, and we did actually have a text conversation where I asked you if you had seen it yet. And then I dissuaded you from seeing it with one line. William, have you seen this yet?
No, I have not. What did you think?
Okay. So it won the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature this past year. And that should tell you everything you need to know right there. We know there's something off here, and we're just waiting for it to be off, which is what I found interesting, Daniel, that you said you were going to see it. That wasn't a warning bell to you? That wasn't a warning sign to you that it won?
Well, I mean, look, other Pixar movies have won Best Feature, and they're good. So, you know. I mean, it is, you have to at least think about it, but Coco won, so.
Yeah, that's true. So, the animation was interesting, right? It's very video game style animation. It's very different. So, I'm sure someone defending it would say, oh, this is the reason it's won. But it won for a very specific reason. So, William, it's sci-fi, right? Into the Spider-Verse. So it's all about the multiverse and it's all about parallel universes.
Right.
When you think of the concept of parallel universes, what is the best way to use that concept in a sci-fi story? Like, thematically, how would you use a parallel universe concept? I mean, you could just talk about good parallel universe stories, sort of like parallels in season 7 of Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation, where Worf sees all his parallel lives.
Yeah, I think the importance there is you're talking about how agency works, right? You're talking about how choices change not only the world, but your own internal character. You know, the thing about the Worf thing is that each Worf was different, right? Those choices had consequences to his internal psychology and character.
Right, so you get to see the way choice literally changes your life.
Right.
The typical multiverse theory. Right. The typical, well, the outside would be the concretization of how the inside is changed in a good story. And the typical multiverse theory in fiction is that every choice that a person makes creates a new universe. And when you explore the multiverse, you explore that. Except here, they explored diversity.
So this is what they naturalism. A exploration of naturalism.
Correct. So in this, it's the Spider-Man origin story, but they retell it a bunch of times with it being slightly different because you're seeing the origins of these different spider people. And I say spider people because they have Spider-Gwen, and they also have this Asian girl from the future who she doesn't get bit by the radioactive spider. She becomes friends with the radioactive spider and builds him a giant robot, which he can then uses with her to fight bad guys.
Wait, are you forgetting the transhuman Spider-Man? I mean, or is this... you said people, but then you just described a Spider-Man that was not human. So I think people...
Well, that's...
Was
you're
going
to take that up
enough.
With the, you're going to have to take that up with the, okay. the creative team, because they did not have the transhuman spider creature. Although that was the scariest episode of the Spider-Man animated series in the 90s when he started becoming an actual giant spider.
Yeah.
I was fucking terrified of that. So... I'm just going to read to you a quote from the end of the movie. This is going to sum it all up. Anyone can wear the mask. You could wear the mask. If you didn't know that before, I hope you do now. Because I'm Spider-Man, and I'm not the only one. Not by a long shot. So, rather than, William, the parallel universe is showing how unique you are, especially because he's not even seeing different versions of himself. He's seeing extremely different Spider-Mans. So rather than showing that you're unique and it's important that you make the choice to be the hero, likewise, they could have gone into the idea that look at these people who got bit by a spider and use the powers to do bad things or use the powers to be lazy, right? It's like, oh, okay, I'm just going to like, you know, be really good at the gym or something.
I'm going
right?
to lick
or,
all the ice cream in this store.
Right, without anyone catching me because I'm going to jump around the cameras and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. So they should have showed all those choices, but instead what they showed is the only thing that makes a Spider-Man, is that he gets bit by a radioactive spider, and then once he accepts that, he will necessarily do good.
Boo.
Because anyone is capable of being Spider-Man.
I'm going to have to jump in here. I think that's a great lesson for social justice advocates to learn. I mean, all you have to do is, you know, earn money, and then you automatically only do good things with it. So therefore, we should not attack businessmen anymore.
No. Earn.
Oh,
you missed
shit.
The point.
Yeah.
Earn.
Damn
he
it.
Got bit by... None of
Damn
them got
it.
Bit by a spider. They didn't earn that. It was all random.
Yeah,
man, I guess that
well,
means
that
we're just going to have to get
awful.
Every businessman bit by a spider. That's going to be the only way I can convert them.
I mean, what's interesting to me is this is in stark contrast to what they hated about Man of Steel, right? I mean, the whole point of Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman was showing Superman choosing to do good with his powers. That his powers were neither good nor bad. He had to choose what he wanted to do with them. And it was up to him as an individual to choose. And this is the opposite. So if anything, this shows why Zack Snyder's versions of the films were so hated with the way the Academy loved this movie. So you should see this movie if you can like not give a shit about that. And you can just appreciate the fact that there's some funny stuff because they play the multiverse for some funny stuff. I mean, Nick Cage is Spider-Man Noir. That's funny. That's funny. And the animation is unique. It looks like a video game, so it's different in that way. But you shouldn't watch this movie if you're just going to get annoyed the whole time like I was. So. All right, let's head into some trailers now. As always, I post the trailers on the website on Saturday, themidside.com/podcast. You can watch them before the episode, after the episode, or during. You can alternate between. Watch a trailer, listen to us talk about it. Watch a trailer, listen to us talk about it.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Black and Blue was submitted by Midsider Alfred, so thanks for that. Usually I pick trailers that came out in the last week. This one came out a while ago, but I found this one really interesting. And I think it's set in, William, is it set in Detroit?
I think so. It's kind of unclear.
It looks sort of like New Orleans,
yeah.
In the area near where the Ninth Ward area. So it could have been that as well. So maybe we could look that up. I wasn't sure, but it's set in an impoverished area with a lot of minorities, specifically black people or African Americans or whatever fucking term you're supposed to use nowadays. And this black woman becomes a cop, So I thought Black and Blue was going to be like some like fighting action movie, but it's literally she's not allowed in either group. So she tries to join the cops, but she's a rookie and she sees some dirty cops shoot someone. So now the cops are against her, but the black people are against her. Her people are against her, whatever the fuck. I can't deal with this. But this is what makes it interesting to me, though. Her people are against her because the non-cops are against her because she's a cop. And, you know, cops and black people don't get along nowadays. So she's torn between these two collectivist worlds, and nobody will help her, even though she has a merit where she's like, a murderer is a murderer. It doesn't matter what group you belong to. Then she gets Tyrese to help her, even though he doesn't really want to. Now, all of that said, the one concern I have is that this will ultimately devolve into collectivism still. They'll find some way to make it about collectivism. But there's really hope in this movie that it could be about, at the end, it's about individualism, because some of it is similar to the idea of Die Hard, where nobody believes in John McClane and nobody will take his side and he saves everyone. So hopefully something similar happens here. So unless I hear anything bad about this movie before it comes out, I'm going to give this movie a chance. Hug.
Hug?
Daniel?
All good points. I think it's a little optimistic for me, meaning your points are optimistic for me. I think the movie will turn out to be woke craziness. So I'm not in, although the premise is unique and interesting. And if I had a couple bourbons in me and there was nothing else to watch on Netflix, I might tune into this. But overall, not really that interested. Tackle.
Yeah, I'm way less optimistic. I'm with Daniel on this one. This is, let's take out our woke checklist. Strong female lead, check. Naturalism in the way it's shot, check. We've got a cliched premise and a sort of very... very kitschy sort of ticking clock with the body cam is going to erase in 12 hours. Perhaps turn it off. I don't know. This doesn't seem like good writing to me, and it seems to hit too many of the woke checklists. So I'm going to tackle.
And it is set in New Orleans, just to be clear.
Okay, I thought it looked like New Orleans, but I was like, that's a very small...
They might
small
have filmed it in Detroit. How much you want to bet? Because it does...
It's got to be cheap as... Yeah. No, everyone films in Louisiana now. It's cheap to film there, especially in that area of Louisiana. The reason I thought it was Detroit and not Louisiana is that's a very small section of New Orleans, Daniel. And I can't imagine setting an entire movie within, like, half a mile of itself.
I think it was the buildings that made us both think Detroit, right? Because there's tons of buildings like the building they're in Detroit.
My first thought was New Orleans, and I was like, there's no way this has to be Detroit. So I was wrong.
Second trailer.
Driven is about John DeLorean. I don't know his first name, but the guy who made the DeLorean that was in Back to the Future. And then Jason Sudeikis plays an informant trying to catch him making a car, trying to raise $30 million for a car. And then there's one brief snippet.
Yeah, this is snippet. Not cocaine, isn't it?
Right. That was why my brain fucked up. But there's one brief snippet where they show there's cocaine in the car or something. But I don't know. This didn't interest me at all. I thought Lee Pace as the DeLorean guy he wasn't convincing. It was very forced. I wasn't into this at all. Tackle.
Strange story. I don't know. Is it a story? I'm not sure. It seems like a collection of scenes, but I guess there's a plot there. Interesting actor choices all around. Overall, not much here, unless you have some weird love of cars or Back to the Future. So tackle.
This is one of those movies where a documentary makes more sense. I mean, this is an interesting story. DeLorean in an effort to make his dream car tries to raise money and in a shady manner and is entrapped And there's all this interesting things about this story, but none of this comes across in this trailer. And I'm just so distracted by the informant character in this trailer that I can't even pay attention to what's going on. I don't know if it's the actor and it's just rubbing me the wrong way, or if it's just badly, if he's just not good. So I'd be interested in others' takes on that, but this is a tackle for me as well.
Tackle.
I think it's because they built the entire trailer around him. The entire story is around him.
It doesn't make
any
sense.
Doesn't really make sense, yeah.
He just seems so annoying.
White man,
final
annoying.
Final trailer.
Jumanji, The Next Level, is the sequel to The Rock's Jumanji film, which I loved, and I gushed about tremendously on this show, and it made a lot of money, and it had a lot of momentum in the box office. They did an interesting thing here where there are new characters that are introduced, and those new characters also go into the game with the kids, and they take on different roles than they did the first time. So there's sort of any number of iterations of this premise they could do where different people go into different actors, which, you know, it was interesting to see The Rock try to act like Danny DeVito. I honestly didn't realize, as much as I love The Rock, I didn't realize he had that much range as an actor. So there's a lot of interesting things about this trailer. At the same time, though, as much as they do these differences to it, it still looks the same thing. They go in the game, they have to figure out what their characters are, and they have to learn about themselves, and then they have to beat the levels of the game. The end. So even though it seems like there's some different stuff here, I fear it's unfortunately going to fall into what Daniel always talks about, is it's not original. It's just the same thing over and over again. But I'm a sucker. It's The Rock. I loved the first one. I'm going to see it anyway. Hug. Daniel?
I literally thought this was the same movie for a while. I was like, this hasn't come out yet. That was my first thought. This hasn't come out yet. Why are we watching another trailer for this? No. Tackle.
Tackle.
Not hashtag. Not my Jumanji. Tackle.
Tackle.
Man, you guys didn't like the first Rock one?
Didn't watch it. Not interested.
Not interested.
The first
there
one
was already
good.
A tremendous Jumanji movie made.
All
so
right.
I tackled all of these, and if I had to watch one of them, it would be Black and Blue, but it would only be a Netflix and Hug, and only after I'm somewhat tipsy.
William, did you tackle all of them?
Yes, I did. And if you held me to watch one of them, I would probably watch Black and Blue. Only because I think I would scratch my eyes out watching that actor in Driven.
Man, neither of you picked Jumanji, huh? No love for The Rock.
I mean,
not that much love. I'd rather rewatch.
Eyes, but...
I'd rather rewatch Baywatch, to be honest, in which he was quite funny.
Come on, Jumanji was his Jumanji movie was a billion times better than his Baywatch movie.
Okay, we'll
that
see.
Movie was pretty bad. But talking about movies and talking about studios that use The Rock, something, I don't want to say super notable, but something that bothered me happened when I went to Universal Studios a couple days ago in Hollywood, and I want to get your guys' perspective on it. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands. In this week's Life on the Midside, I want to talk about getting lunch at Universal Studios Hollywood. So we were in the Simpsons area in Universal Studios Hollywood, which, Daniel, have you ever been to it? I was surprised at like how many restaurants they had and how expansive it is.
I think it's been renovated because I was there a long time ago and it was not all that interesting. Like they had like a Moe's Tavern that you couldn't go in and a Quickie Mart that you couldn't go in. And they really only had the one ride, which was the 3D sort of simulated roller coaster. That was it when I was there.
They still have the one ride, but you can go in Moe's Tavern now. We actually ended up eating in Moe's Tavern. We got Krusty Burger and ate in Moe's Tavern. But that's the end of the story. So you grew up to the end. But yeah, I thought that was cool. I get to always say I ate at Moe's in my life. That was cool. And the fact that you could go on Krusty Burger and Quickie Mart, I'm glad you have that memory, because I remember going before a long time ago, and they only had the ride and they didn't make it. So they must have made it bigger, huh?
I think so.
Yeah. But one of the things they added was a taco truck. So if you're in Springfield, you got to eat at the Bumblebee Man's taco truck, right?
Yeah.
Great.
So we're in line at the taco truck.
Ay, Dios mío.
Yeah. Get that drop, William. And I thought that was a drop at first. I was like, when did he say that on this show? So we order, and right after we order, the fire alarm starts going off inside the taco truck, right? Which I don't see any smoke or anything, but I'm like, well, fuck, that sucks. Like, they better get out of there, right? The alarm's going off. I am not kidding you when I say this. This woman who had ordered like a few people ahead of us goes up to the window and she goes, what's going on? And the girl's like, well, there's a fire alarm, so we have to leave. And the woman says, I've been waiting here for 20 minutes for my food. Are you telling me I'm going to have to wait another 20 minutes now? And the girl's like, there's a fire alarm. We have to leave because the fire alarm's going off. And she's like, but my food. I want my food. And the girl just walks away. Now, what ended up happening was that woman got angry and left. The people in front of us and us were told, we'll take you anywhere you want. Where do you want to eat? We'll bring you to the front of the line and you can eat whatever you want. And they were going to give us more than we ordered, right? So they didn't even look at how much we ordered. This is why we ended up at Krusty Burger. They were just like, what do you want from the Krusty Burger menu? And we ordered and they go, is there anything else you want? So we could have like gotten lots of food for free. It was great customer service. So props to Universal for that, because they were like, the truck's going to be shut down for a while because of the fire alarm. But I was really taken aback. Because to me, part of individualism is the social contract. And what I mean by that is, to have your individuality respected, you must respect other people's individuality. Now, I'm not saying that requires you to be benevolent to them, but this was literally a case where somebody else's right to life mattered. This woman was literally saying her tacos were more important than those people's lives. Make the fucking tacos and then get out. It doesn't matter if there's a fucking fire.
The taco truck burning around the person, and her crusty burning arm sticking out. Your tacos, ma'am.
It's literally that meme, isn't it, William? Where she's making tacos and it's on fire around her, and she's like, this is fine.
Yep.
It's literally that meme. Like, this blows my mind.
Now offering fire roasted tacos.
I was going to make a fire sauce joke, but that's fine.
Yeah, the fire sauce one is good, too. For me,
well, I can see
her
getting the tacos and saying, I ordered chicken.
That's what I back in the burning taco truck. This is wrong.
And you know she would have done that, too, if they had done that and there was something she didn't like. Now, This is my question for you two. Am I just older, so I'm noticing this more now, or is this a degradation of our culture? Because to me, I don't remember this happening 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Even when I was in my mid-20s, I don't remember stuff like this happening. Now, I also didn't live in California, but I went to places where there were lots of people. I went to theme parks. I didn't see this kind of stuff happening. What is going on?
Well, we often hammer home the narcissism, but I think in this case it's more like a lack of empathy, or like realizing that other people exist and have autonomy and that sort of stuff, which comes along with narcissism. But like, it, I guess maybe it's my restaurant privilege that I have that makes me immediately think like, oh shit, I know they're gonna have a terrible day if the fire alarm starts going off, especially if one of the like fire suppression systems goes off. It's like, you're gonna have a bad day. Probably a bad couple days, right?
Yeah, it's a matter of, I think there is something to this concept of affluenza, which is that the more money, disposable income one has, the sort of more sick you become in a certain sense. And in this case, I think the sickness is simply that you expect things. You have a certain, it is a certain narcissism, but I mean, is you have certain expectations about your money and how it's spent. And so people do tend to think of these things as an expediency and not as a matter of human beings interacting with each other. This woman isn't interacting with, you know, Jose and Jose Ita making her food. She's interacting with a truck. She's interacting with a business. She's interacting with, you know, just food. And so she wants it now. It's hers. She paid for it, etc. She's not thinking about the individuality of these people because it's all about the expediency. It's all about, I need this now. It's my money. I demand it, etc.
So then, because I'm assuming this woman didn't have any more disposable income than I have, although maybe she could have. But let's assume she had the same amount as I had. Is it just that I'm so hyper-focused on individualism and valuing the individual because it's such a high value to me that that doesn't affect me in that way?
Yes, because my point here in thinking about it is the fact that anyone has disposable income to go to Universal Studios and buy food from an overpriced food truck, you know, whenever this was to begin with, is an example of the affluence of our culture in general, even though this person, I'm not saying this person was Rockefeller, right? It's just that our culture has provided a mechanism by which this person isn't starving to death. They're not out hunting deer. They're not, you know, they have shelter, etc. And now they have disposable income to buy Simpsons food truck food. And there comes along with that some lack of respect for how we got the affluence, how society made it, how there are individuals who built this thing around us, and it wasn't just always there.
So it's sort of one of my arguments about California in general, that people are so comfortable that they don't realize what's actually going on around them.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. So, I mean, I don't see it in this drastic kind of sense all the time, but the sort of treatment of food workers in general tends to be terrible. That's become cliche now. And in certain really highly affluent areas, I would say DC is one of them, probably LA, certain parts is another, where it happens the other direction as well, where the food workers now are just sort of outright just disdainful of the customers. So it happens both ways from time to time.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. That was the biggest thing when people would ask, when I lived in Baltimore, where people ask if we want to go out to dinner in DC, I'm always like, why? Like, let's, like, at least in Baltimore, you have some chance of having some sort of positive customer service. I mean, yeah. There's definitely no,
in DC,
no
there's
chance.
No
in
chance.
DC.
There's no chance. There's zero chance.
Well, did you see the
it's
thing
funny that
in
you
DC?
Noticed that? Anyway, sorry.
Did you see the thing that happened in DC recently where the guy went into that barbecue place?
Hill Country.
And there was a guy wearing the Trump hat. And
where I frequent often.
Well, see, I thought that's where I had heard of it. I was like, I either heard of it from Dan or from House of Cards.
That's where I said hi to Brett Kavanaugh when he was out having a barbecue and beer by himself.
Okay, well, maybe it is a Nazi place then. But the guy went in there, and somebody had a Trump hat, and he like accosted him for being a Nazi. And the guy doing the accosting got thrown out, and he was super pissed about it because he's like, oh, you support Nazis, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Minor addendum to that story, Hill Country is, one, delicious. It's probably the best barbecue you can get in D.C., and it's not like Austin, Texas, but it has reminiscent. It reminds me of Austin, Texas. But anyway, it's a big enough space where they bring in, like, tourist buses and stuff. Like, they have a ton of space for a D.C. establishment, so you're always going to see MAGA hat people. You're always going to see, you know, vagina hat people. Like, it's just because they're a bunch of tourists coming in because it's a huge space. So it's not like this is a regular Trump hangout for people. It's an eclectic mix of tourists, basically.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, well.
Point being, DC customer service typically is terrible. I suspect that is in some way a reaction to the fact that DC customers are terrible, but not in its entirety. I think it's mostly an affluence thing.
Interesting point. All right. Any other final thoughts on this Life on the Midside segment?
You have seemed to have a lot of terrible interactions with people.
Okay, to be fair, I did not have this interaction. This person was in front of me in line. My interaction with the people in front of me was very pleasant, and with the girl who helped us get our free food was very pleasant. So I would like to point that out.
Part of it is fully on me, which is that I have made this sort of conscious decision as of years ago to sort of, when I'm in public and I'm not with my wife or child or friends, just sort of put my headphones in, crank my podcast up, and then sort of tune out the entire world. So I guess I don't have I don't observe this kind of behavior all the time because I'm actively trying to avoid it.
Well, that's true.
Hypervigilant.
Correct. I'm hypervigilant, which is part of the problem. But then also in this specific situation, I wanted to know what was going to happen with the money I paid. We were all the people, you know, myself and the people in front of me. We were all like, what's going to happen? Like, we want them to get out because we don't want them to burn, but also we did pay money. So are they going to tell us to go to the front of the park and get reimbursement? What are they going to do? Now, again, they handled it very well, and they did exactly that was the best possible way they could have handled that. Exemplary customer service by Universal Hollywood.
Ah, capitalism.
Yeah. Wow. No, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, wow, that was perfect. So part of it was we were all in a heightened situation to begin with.
Now, imagine if this was a government-run food truck and you'd have to go to a different state to file a form, and then you'd have to be stamped in triplicate, and you'd have to get a notary public, and you'd have to go down and petition your local councilman, et cetera, and then eventually you'd get a refund that didn't cover the total cost of your time.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
All right. That about sums it up. Let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this trip? William?
I learned that I can no longer enjoy weed because that existed during the time of slavery. It's gone. We should
drop the hemp bomb.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's the real reason I'm straight edge. Social justice.
Yeah.
I learned that there are more ice cream related stories weekly than I thought there would be. So tune in to the Midside for your hot ice cream talk. Hot ice cream is terrible. Never mind. Okay. Justin, what did you learn?
I was going to say that hot ice cream was terrible. Apparently Daniel knows what's going on in my head at all times because he correctly said everything that I was thinking during the earthquake. So
Boat. Okay,
son.
Go ahead. So you didn't learn anything else? That's fine. Yeah. We hope that you learned something this week. And if you did, tell us on social media at the Midside everywhere. But I hope by this point you're following us. But for you new people out there, you new listeners, we're on all the social medias at the Midside. So check us out there. You can go to themidside.com/podcast and catch up on all the past episodes if you missed any. Or you can go to Apple Podcasts or Google Play and get them there and subscribe. And when Justin presses publish on Midside Mondays, you'll get it delivered right to your device of choice. Leave us a 5-star review there. That helps us. If you want to rep the show, if you want to wear some, you want to have some Midside swag, is that the word that the kids use? You go to themidside.com/store and get your False Dichotomy Bro shirt or your Hail Snydra shirt or your classic logo shirt. You can also go to patreon.com/themidside and help us by giving the show a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. Helps us keep the lights on. We do produce Patreon-exclusive content from time to time, such as a recent Patreon-exclusive review of that show that's over. Game of Thrones.
Deep,
thank you.
Deep analysis.
Deep, deep analysis for the show that was 8 miles wide and 1 inch deep. So check that out. And thanks to Liberty.
I mean, that's still pretty big.
Yeah, no, it's huge. It goes on for forever, but you know, you're not going to drown in it or anything. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Shout out to our libertarians out there. But most importantly, telling a friend about the show is really, really important this summer because it's hot outside. And what else are you going to do except stay in and listen to podcasts? And your friend needs to cool down with the hot ice cream talk from the show. So let them know if they're also declaring their independence from the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, tell them to join us here on the Midside. And someone reach out to Justin Amash and let him know that we would be happy to interview him. Until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have an ice cream day.
I mean, if you're going to lick ice cream in the store, tin roof is really the flavor you choose. Tin roof? Sounds terrible.
I am privileged in some way.
William, yeah. Really not having ice cream sundae?
Oh! Damn.
Man.